Has anyone ever inspired you to create a more fulfilling and successful life for yourself? As a leader in your business and in your community, what are the questions that you ask yourself on a daily basis? What are the questions that keep you up at night? I am your host, Betty Collins. I am a CPA. I'm a business owner. And I partner with other women, other business owners who want to have remarkable results for themselves and for their business and their community. And I'm here to help inspire you to take positive steps forward for a better life. So over the next 12 episodes and kind of this season, we're going to focus on lessons learned. We're going to hear from other women who have learned lessons, and they're going to share with you. You know why? Because it's the right thing to do to help you navigate maybe similar situations that you're in. And you don't have to go through what they've gone through. And I hope to challenge you that you have lessons learned in your journey that other women need to hear. Never underestimate that part of your life and that story, because it will have impact. In my opinion, we're obligated to share those life lessons. In my opinion, we have a responsibility to each other, woman to woman, or women to men. But I really believe what we've learned in our lessons over our journey are impactful, and they need to be part of how you give back and how you help others. So welcome to Inspiring Women. Today we have a guest who is just amazing. I think you're going to really enjoy her. Her resume and her accomplishments are so inspiring, and I think that she will have a lot to offer you. You're just going to get a touch of who she is. She is my guest, and this will be probably a two-part series, I can imagine, just because of the amount of content we could have. We could have it even longer. But so, you know, who is Penny Zinker? First, she will be the keynote speaker at Brady Ware's Leadership Conference on June 7th in Columbus, Ohio. And it's a full day. It's a full day conference with a great breakfast kickoff, motivating message. We're going to have breakouts and we'll have a great cocktail hour. But at the noontime when we're doing some awards and things, she's going to be our speaker. If you can come to that, you it would be worth your time, I'm telling you. So again, she's called a focusologist. We'll get to that. She's an international speaker. She's a business strategy coach and a best-selling author. The book I literally just ordered so I can take it on my vacation is The Productivity Zone, Stop the War, Stop the Tug of War with Time. And let me just say that slower, ladies, because stop the tug of war with time. This applies really a lot to us, men too. It's society in general, but I think we're really going to get more out of it. She's built and sold million-dollar business. She founded, developed, and eventually sold her first multi-million-dollar business while living in Zurich, Switzerland, which would be cool. She went on to work with business unit turnarounds and was a Tony Robbins business coach, assisting, you know, entrepreneurs around the world to double their businesses. And she's passionate about fighting stress and creating better communications. She has more than one book, by the way. I'm just was referring to the one we'll talk about more of those today. You know, if you ask her clients what her true gift is, she cuts to the chase. So that is a person I can relate to. She helps focus on what really is important, you know, the factors and those relevant areas of sustainable business growth. And whether you're in business or you're part of a business, and whether you pay the paycheck or you get the paycheck, these things apply. So the reason I wanted her for my conference, because I go through about a 3-day of watching video upon video and finding people out there, was her passion on focus and time. And her story, very cool story. What is urgent versus important? I love that line, and I've written it in my office a couple months ago. Focusing, but this was the thing that got me, and we're going to talk about this conversation she had in Peter's office eventually. But focusing on what the 20% that's going to make the 80% of the difference. I love that, and then what gets in the way of making that 20% work?
because I want to talk a lot about that today. But on top of just her energy and everything, of course, she has a podcast. She's a best-selling author. She's has a blog. She does TED Talks. So you're truly an inspiration to women who can just get out there and find you. And we'll make sure when we launch this podcast that they can find all those things about you, because it's a great resource as you jump in and you see it. So we're going to get started, Penny, and we're going to talk about you. So first, I'm not a bio reader. That is not my way. You can tell your story better than anyone. So just tell us. I think I've told you who Penny is, but I want her to tell who Penny is.
Well, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really grateful to be here. So who is Penny Zenker?
Yes.
That's a deep question, right? Who
yes.
are we?
Who are we?
It's a big question, but it is interesting how I've attached myself to focus, and I'll tell you why in many ways, and it really does describe who I am. Because looking back, right, in order for me to brand myself, I had to say, well, who am I, and how did this all come about? And you know, one of the things that I've always kind of just kept. And these are three steps that I use in my new book. I've always kind of stopped if I felt stressed or frustrated, you know, as quickly as I can, notice it as quickly as you can, and kind of step back away from it so that you can get some perspective and then head back on the path, right? The right path. And that's been sort of very simple, you know, three steps. It would say step back, get perspective, and realign. Those three things are what help us to get focused. And that's really what I've worked with entrepreneurs all around the world with, is just helping people to get clear on what to focus on and why to focus on it. And bringing it to the real story is I think where that all came from was my father died in an accident when I was 19. And when something like that turns your life upside down, you know, first of all, you feel like your life is completely out of control. You know, where you thought you could control everything up to that point, you know, it's an illusion, right? And so it made me become so present to what we can control and what we can't control. And how do we, as best we can, let go of those things that we can't control? How do we accept? And so what I came up with is what I talk about in my new book, which is called, I took what I call a reset moment, right? That moment where we step back, we get perspective and we realign. And at first, right, it was really a coping mechanism so that I could ground myself, so that I could just have that little semblance of feeling in control in the moment and determine, you know, what can I control and focus on that. But I started to use it everywhere in my life. And then, of course, then I coach people around it, right? And I just didn't know what to call it or what it was. But really, all of that leads into why I call myself a focusologist.
Well, when I read about you were 19 and your dad had died from this accident, that's that in itself, that you could get perspective at 19. I'm sure you didn't get that the day it happened or even the week after
it
happened.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't get it the day.
No, but it was, you chose, and it doesn't just all start clicking, but I thought that was profound in the terms that that was a defining reset moment that has probably defined your career and your story. I mean, your story is good. And so my question was going to be, you had a moment at 19, but you have described that beautifully, and you've discovered reset moments. So we're going to, I'm sure, talk about that a lot as we move on. But, you know, give us the insight, a little bit of, hey, this is what I've kind of done in my career. And then I want to end that in that day in Peter's office. Because
okay.
that was something that I was totally attracted to when you started talking about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, my career's been interesting and all over the place. I mean, I went to school for accounting and finance. My father was an accountant. I used to work in his office in the summers and, you know, at other times. And it was just so safe and easy. And so I thought, well, he does that, you know, not necessarily thinking I could go into the family business, but it was safe. Everyone's always going to hire an accountant. And my brothers, they graduated from college and they were looking for jobs and it was hard. So I'm a very practical person like that. But I didn't like it. It really wasn't for me. Like I took some technology classes and I just loved those. And I dove into those. And so where that ended up taking me was after, so I did go to be in accounting at first, and I was at JP Morgan in New York City and went to all the different departments, and so interesting. But it was still technology that I was really fascinated with and seemed to somehow get involved in the technology aspect of the accounting. And so then, I don't know, it just happened. Somebody suggested to me we should start a business. And I sort of took the leap into technology. I don't have that kind of background, but you know, there was someone that I met who was doing it, had less experience. I was sort of managing them in the context that we were. And I was like, well, why not me? You know, like take the leap. So I did. I started this company, you know, from just me, and was very fortunate and slowly, you know, but surely built it up to a multi-million dollar business. And then I sold it to a public company. And I happened to be living in Zurich, Switzerland at the time when I did this. So I always say it's not enough that, you know, you go into an industry that you don't know, right? But I'm doing this in a foreign country and in some cases in a foreign language. So it was not always easy.
Entrepreneurship is not easy. It's not something simple. Everyone says, oh, you set your own hours. I go, yeah, they're called 24/7.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. That's hysterical. That is totally true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in my accounting, I will tell you, I had to choose a major. And so I chose accounting because they said business management is a dime a dozen. Choose at least economics or accounting. And I said, I'm certainly not going to go econ, but I'll do accounting. But I never want to be a CPA. I never really want to be an owner in a CPA firm. I don't want to work for a large company. And all those, when I kept saying I'm never going to do those things, those nevers became my opportunity. But I do as little as accounting as I can. So I will say that. But it was safe at first, but then it became this, hey, I could be an entrepreneur and then affect business lives, right? So you stepped into, I'm going to do this, and you build it. And my goodness, abroad, that would be a challenge just with many things, I would think. But
yeah, so, a challenge and an opportunity, right? So the interesting thing is, you know, as a foreigner, sometimes it's also an opportunity. People are interested. Like, you know, it gives you, so even though it's difficult on some ways, it also can give you the edge. So you have to, with anything, right? You have to look at and take advantage of where there's an opportunity for you.
Right. And you can see the opportunity. If you don't seize it, it doesn't matter that it's there. You know,
right.
So you obviously did that and had great success. But the thing that I really loved about your career was the one line of, and I'm in Peter's office. So let's talk about that.
Okay. So that was after I sold my technology business. So I was really, it was perfect time at the perfect place with technology, almost perfect. And really the business was burning me out. Like I was, You mentioned before we got on, you know, my schedule was packed. I had no boundaries. I was working nights and weekends, and I was just completely overloaded and overwhelmed. I was a terrible micromanager. So I was doing this to myself. And didn't necessarily learn my lesson. And that's how I ended up in Peter's office. He had just hired me 6 months ago, and he hired me to be the chief technology officer. Well, to keep it short, he hired me. I'd been working for him for 6 months. But those same things, they followed me. I thought that I was getting away from it to come and work at this, you know, big market research company, and they got money and funds and resources, and it would be easy. And again, I brought all that stuff with me. So when I went in to quit, he listened really, you know, intently. And then he broke the silence that he had after listening for a while. And he said, listen, he said, Penny, I hired you to make decisions. And what you do is up, what you do with the rest of your time is up to you. And man, I was so annoyed at that. Like, Peter, doesn't that seem ridiculously oversimplified?
Yes. Yes.
Right. And so, but I came to realize that actually we need to hear things oversimplified because it's the only thing that cuts through the clutter and the complexity that we are sticking ourselves in, right? And so it was brilliant. It was so brilliant. And I, what shall I go on with where that took me?
Or, go with it where you took it, because this is what really I zoned in on that, because it applies in my life and I loved it. It had impact. So keep going.
Awesome. So, you know, what I realized is all he was telling me was that the decisions in my role, for everyone's role, it might be different. In my role that I was in was the 20% that makes 80% of the difference. That's the 80-20 rule. And, you know, I had heard of it before, but I wasn't really living it. There's a lot of things that we know what to do, but we just don't do what we know, right? And so it was like a hammer on the head that was like, oh my goodness, I need to live with, you know, this 80-20 rule and use it. And it is what I call a reset practice. So it makes us take this reset moment and it makes us to step back and reconnect to that bigger picture and say, what is the goal? You know, let's get to the root cause of this problem, right? Get that clear. So then you can say, okay, now what's the 20%? What's that one thing that is going to be the most important thing, the most impactful thing? It's going to make 80% of the difference. And that was a huge shift in perspective for me. And I didn't quit the job because I looked at it differently now. I was more resourceful. And I think that's what we can take away from the 80-20 rule or any type of reset practice, is it makes us more resourceful.
Yeah, because your job was the same. Yeah. Nothing changed about what you had to accomplish or the ending goals or the department or the amount of employees or the amount of those emails that never stop. That didn't change.
Right. It just stopped me from being caught up in the minutiae in the 80% that didn't really get me anywhere.
Right, right. And I really tried to go, how do I make that rule? So it's why I want your book, and it's why I'm going to really dive into looking at kind of, you know, and reset for me is always after April 15th. You're like, okay, you got this 30-day period, like, okay, should I retire? Should I downsize? Should I do all these things? Because it's just a rough time period, and it's every year. It doesn't stop. And, you know, today, especially, we're living in a weird time. I mean, politically, socially, environmentally, you just wake up going, I have no control of anything. But I tell business owners, you do. The running your business and how it, the outcomes of it, you really do have control over that one thing. So stick there, right? But there seems to be so much triggering. You never heard that word back in the 80s when I was doing this, or even the 90s. It seemed like, what do you mean trigger? What are you talking about? But it's distracting. All of this is distracting and it's exhausting, and it can really get you if you're not careful. And so managing time, there's so many books on it, and, you know, work-life balance, and I just get sick of it. But, you know, managing your time right now and energy is really important, because we're kind of living in a time that's not comfortable. And you don't always know what to do. And I like the fact that you talk about gatekeepers. So we're going to talk about that in a minute, because I'm like, man, I would love a gatekeeper. I'd like one at my house. I'd like one here. I'd like one everywhere. Where's the gatekeeper? And I don't think I have that. It's like, how do I get a gatekeeper? So, but we're overscheduled. We're overcommitted. You were talking about being overwhelmed and overstimulated. It's just life today. So I want to focus on a few things as we talk about your 80-20 rule and the first book and kind of this Peter aha moment. And you kind of break it into to four categories. So let's just talk about, everyone thinks if they're this resilient, it all goes away or it's all great. You know, I mean, I've talked that word till I'm, but what do we do with resilience that maybe goes wrong or is wrong? What is it that you, because you focus on that?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I think the challenge with resilience, I'll start here and you can tell me if this is what you mean. It's also to understand what is resilience. And so we think that it's, most people, if I ask them what's resilience, they say it's getting back up, it's grit and powering through. But there's one problem. And there's one key element that I think people don't talk about that's absolutely essential to resilience, and that's letting go. Because you can power through something, you can get back up after you have a really difficult time. But if you're carrying it with you, you're not going to get very far. You're not really going to move further faster, right? You got back up. So I think that, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, that I talk about and that I feel like is part of what happens when we reset, is that we allow ourselves to let go. And so then we can, you know, go and grow and move into the future easier.
No, that's perfect.
That's perfect.
Yeah. If you think you don't know the question, just answer it how you'd like. If you think you know what I'm saying, no, that's fine. But we talked again about the 80-20 rule. And so tell me in that moment where you're like, okay, I got to figure out the 20% that makes the most difference in the 80%, if I'm saying that right. How did you start making sure that was happening, the 20%? And the second part of that question is, when you see it rising up to 30 and 40, what do you do?
Okay. So there's a lot of different ways to determine the 20%, but for me, I like to use sort of the decision matrix of the effort versus impact, because the 20%, right, is geared towards what's going to make the greatest impact. So I see if you were to take the four quadrants, but using effort and impact, right? So you've got maybe effort at the bottom and impact across the top. So that top quadrant that's low effort, high impact, that's your 20%. That's your quick wins. That's where you should do those things first. Because if you start, and that's why I don't like the urgency versus important. I used to, but then I realized that's putting urgency, it's giving it too much power. And we have too many false urgencies that it doesn't focus us as accurately. So if we are really clearly and accurately focused on what the impact we're looking to achieve, and what kind of effort, you know, then we're going to be focused on the right things. Because anyway, that's how you find your 20%. There's other ways to find your 20% as well, right? You could even just say, what's the one thing that's going to make the biggest difference? And we intuitively, we know, we just don't take the time to think it through. And we can do this across our life. Like, what's the one thing that in our health that would make the biggest difference? We know what's in deficit. Am I not getting enough sleep? Am I eating the wrong foods? Am I not moving enough? You know, so what's the one thing that would make the biggest difference? Like the domino effect that would, everything else would kind of fall into line. And you can challenge that. And by challenging it, you'll find out whether that's really true.
And I've been trying to do more of that. Okay, what is the impact of what I'm doing right now? Is this really going to get me the results that I need? Is it? And it's so hard because you sit and go, I don't know what to stop doing. So I don't edge out of that 20 and now I'm back to 30 and I'm up to 40 and I'm mad that I'm doing it, right? Or I'm not there. And I'm like, why am I doing this? And yet you still just do it. And so I really have to question that routinely. What is the one thing that's going to have the biggest impact, even in my day today? What is it? Right.
Multiple times a day. I think that's exactly the point, is we think that we set priorities once and they're static. They're not. They've got to be dynamic. You get a call from a client that has a challenge. Your kid needs a pickup, you know, like over and over, right? There's things that come up. So that's why these reset moments are the times that can happen multiple times a day that we reset our priorities, that we're dynamically. So the whole idea of this reset mindset that I talk about is dynamic reassessment. Because think about it, when you're in that mindset, change is no big deal. We're used to that. It's like, you know, change is what we deal with all the time. And when we have a dynamic reassessment, we don't get upset with it. We don't argue with our reality that this isn't fair or we don't want to do this. We just get on and do it, right? It's just part of the process.
And I think, Sue, you live in different seasons. I spoke to a group of women last night and they said, what's that golden nugget? And I said, every season's different. So your 60s are not your 40s, your 20s are not your 30s. And so your whole, what you're going to get out of that season might be completely different. And it's okay that you thought, well, this season was going to be this. And then you get there and you're like, it's not the end goal. It's not the one thing that's going to get me the impact. So I'm going to reset that. And it's okay because, you know, when I had little kids and I had that, I was not out networking at night, right? And then you do the let's run to every school event and you're like, okay, but I don't want to miss that. And then, of course, I missed my daughter's best basketball game so I could wrap up 10:40s. I will never forgive myself for it. But at the same time, it's like at that moment, it was like, I've got to do this so I can do it's a game. It's 40 minutes away. I'm not going to drive. And then you go, but I missed the best game. And so right. you have a hard time because we want it all. We think we have to do it all to have it all, and it's myth. And so you it's a reset on a constant basis, right?
Absolutely.
But with my adult children,
too,
yeah.
Right?
Well, my adult children. I mean, I have kids who are 33 and 31, and they have great little babies, and I would be with those babies on a constant basis, right? They're just the joy. And but at times they just bombard my life with, "Hey, we're showing up tonight." Wow. So what are you bringing for dinner? Because and it is a constant reset. And then is it the right thing to go? This isn't good. But even today in my life, my son, spontaneously came. He had to do some things. And he said, what can we do today? And I said, I'm doing two very important things today. And I'm going to figure out how we're going to do something. But these are the things I've got to shoot for today. And it's not ignoring you. And it's not ignoring your children. And so it's a constant. And that's why I liked, how do I get there? And I thought, I'm going to get this book and figure it out. Because I'm in a different season right now. It's called transitioning and letting go and making the team better so that I do less so they can do more. And I feel like I'm managing that all, it's a constant. I'm glad you said it is a day-to-day thing, and it could be by noon you change your whole day,
Absolutely.
I love that.
You have to be part of, and I think the book that tells more of that, the Productivity Zone is a little bit different, but the book that talks more about that is The Reset Mindset, because it helps us, like you talked about communication. You know, you said to your son, I'm going to figure this out. But I do have this, and we're going to figure out how to work it all in. You know, it's also communicating that this is a no, and here's why, and having people understand. And I always found here, coming back to the 80-20 rule, is that when you're clear what the 20% is, it's easier to communicate. Other people can understand it better. Right. So that makes the whole communication, whether it's your family or your team, it makes it easier. It's also easier to let go, isn't it? When you're really clear, like, you know, that if your grandbabies are coming over, right, that's going to be a priority, and you're going to let some things go. You're going to make some compromises. So part of that effort versus impact matrix is also about understanding that first quadrant is to prioritize, but the second quadrant up at the top is to optimize, right? How can we optimize the things that are high effort? And then there's minimize in the lower corner, and then compromise. And we have to be willing to do all of those things based on what the situation or the environment is calling for.
Right. And even today, we did and this may not be a big deal, but instead of me thinking, I better have pancakes this morning, I had Pop-Tarts and cereal that's full of sugar. It's probably not good. And here's all the fruit you guys can eat, and I'm heading out the door, but here's everything possible for. I didn't sit around and go, I better get up and get this done, and because we have to sit down, we have to have pancakes, blah, blah, blah. Why? It's right. Why? And they were fine. They didn't expect the pancakes, you know? I mean, they might have, they didn't say it. And so it's the little decisions like that that keep you in the 20%. And you're right,
absolutely,
the communication. But here's a question, you know, that when we're talking about the distractions and the things that take our time, you know, and we live in this environment today where we get overscheduled and all these things. We don't, I think, even take the time to identify distractions. We don't take the time to go, because that's part of, in my mind, tell me if I'm wrong or right, in living in the 20%. You have to know your distractions. Most people in your life can tell you what they are, but you can't. So how do we focus in on that so we get, you know, at least minimize those distractions that exhaust us?
Right. Well, so I do use a phrase. I say we have to own our actions and our distractions. And it's exactly that. We have to create that awareness. I have a distraction quiz. People can go to distractionquiz.com.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
And find out what their distraction profile is. It's simply we have to recognize that we are addicted to distraction and how much it's costing us. Right. So that's why in half the times we're not getting to our 20% because we're watching cat videos or going to the refrigerator 100 times so that we can procrastinate whatever it is we don't want to do, you know, or binging, you know, a whole season of something because the temptations are there. Right. So the first thing is to create some heightened awareness. You can track your distractions every day. You can just do a quiz like this to go, oh, right. You know, these are some of those things. What else is missing? I have something I call 1-3-5 daily planner. And on that is every day just to think about what distracted me today and look at how you can, once you say what distracts you, then you can say, how do I eliminate this? And I also have 4 questions that you can ask yourself that can be helpful as well.
Well, I would go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I will definitely put on when we do this where they can get to that quiz because I think that would be. I'm gonna definitely do it because I think you have to be able, if you're not gonna be overcommitted, overscheduled, overwhelmed, and overstimulated, you have to know what are the distractions, what's taking you there, what's exhausting
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
So go ahead. Do you know the 4 questions off the top of your head since we're just really flowing here?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
So the 4 questions are just, what's your biggest distractor? But then there's also the hidden things, right? That you might think of your phone and your email or something like that. But also, what takes the most time? What wastes the most time? And what creates the most stress? Those are the 4 questions that, I bring at events and everything just to challenge people to think about, if you can, those are the 20%. If you can find one thing in each of those categories, which sometimes it's the same thing, then you know what to work on, and then you can start putting these gatekeepers into place.
Mm-hmm. So today we talked with Penny Zinger, and you got a lot of information from her. And this is the end of part 1. We are going to have part 2, and it's going to start with something called the gatekeeper. And I think you're going to love it. We all need gatekeepers, so make sure you tune in to the second part of Penny Zinger's podcast because you're going to really, really love what she has to say.
More about inspiring women can be found on BradyWeir.com. Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thank you for listening.